music means it's time for the Saturday Evening Libertarian Conversation on this Saturday evening, October 8th, 2005. And this is Harry Brown, your host for the next 2 hours, and I'm pleased to be back with you. We have a very nice guest tonight, Miss Mary Ruart, who will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. And I think you're going to find her to be a very interesting guest with a lot of interesting things to say. I read a document that she wrote this past week, and I have to say that I thought I knew a good deal about the subject, but I learned a good deal more just reading the document. And so I invite you to stay with us, and if you have any comments or questions, you can fire away at 1-800-259-9231. Unfortunately, I cannot take email questions tonight. This was one of those days when everything went wrong. Internet Explorer does not work. Outlook does not work. I called Microsoft. They told me that the $35 helpline had just closed, but that I could get in on the $245 professional helpline. And in desperation, I said, all right, I'll pay it. And then they put me on hold for about an hour and a quarter. And my poor wife, Pamela, got pretty tired of holding dinner. So I finally hung up. And so I have neither Outlook Express, Outlook, or Internet Explorer. But I have you, and I have Genesis, and we have a chance to spend the next 2 hours talking about a lot of interesting things. One of the things that I find interesting is that every year at this time, California and Oregon and Washington and parts of Nevada go through a spate of forest fires, and they come up every year at this time, and we hear about the heroic firefighters and how much damage has been done and all of these things. Not nearly, of course, the coverage for Hurricane Katrina, because it's not quite the same. It's not on the same scale. But we hear all of this year after year after year. And I have never, ever heard it mentioned that all of this damage takes place on government property, that these are government forests that are burning. If it were a Boise Cascade forest, for instance, you'd hear about it. You'd news would mention that the Boise Cascade forest was on fire and that Boise Cascade was marshaling its resources to fight the fire. Now, why do you suppose that is? Well, I can only surmise that it is because Boise Cascade has figured out how to avoid forest fires, just as they have figured out how to avoid the environmental damage that's taking place on government property. All through the government forest, you see these seedlings that are being damaged and that are dying from various kinds of tree diseases. But right next door to some of these government forests are forests owned by Boise Cascade and other private companies, and you never hear about damage to these properties because these companies have figured out how to take care of their property. And more than anything else, they have an incentive to take care of their property. They have to worry about the future value of that property. And if the future value goes down because of various kinds of forest diseases, then the dividends dry up immediately. And when the dividends dry up, or even if the thought is in the air that the dividends will dry up 5 years from now, the price of the stock goes down. And the stock options and warrants and anything else that's held by the executives of the country, of the company, become worth much less than they were before. So the managers of the company have an incentive to make absolutely sure that these forests are kept in prime condition. And when they do, they make sure that there is no environmental degradation. But meanwhile, next door or down the highway someplace is a government forest which is undergoing severe degradation, and we hear about that. And it's just a matter of simple logic that people who do not own the property that they are tending cannot possibly take as great an interest in its future value as those who do own the property or who are employed directly by those who own the property. Well, who owns the government property? Oh, we all own the government property. It's yours and mine and everybody in the United States. But that's meaningless, absolutely meaningless. If I am a part owner in that government property, I want to sell my share immediately. Get a broker on the phone and get me the best price possible. I don't care what that is, I just want out. But I can't do that. Therefore, I have no stake in the future value of that property, whether it's a forest or a mine, a property that has mines on it, or a property that is grazed. It's the same thing. And what happens is that the as the value goes down, there is nobody who really cares. Not the people who are leasing the property, not the people who are, when I say leasing it, the people who are actually using the property, leasing it from the government, and using the property to mine or to graze or to clear cut the forest. Whatever it may be, they have no concern about the future value. Their concern is to get as much out of the property in the short term as they possibly can. And so there is a tendency to overgraze. There is a tendency to clear cut. There is a tendency to strip mine, to do whatever will get the greatest value out in the short term. Now, the people who are actually managing the property and leasing it to these companies also don't have a stake in it. They don't own any options or warrants or anything that would give them a stake in the future value. Now, what do you suppose would happen if the government sold that property to the people who are actually using it? Suddenly, those companies that are using it would have a real incentive to take the long term into consideration, as they do when they do own their own properties around the country. There are mines that are owned by the people who are using it. There is grazing land that's owned by the people who are using it. And there are forests that are owned by the people that are using it. And the popular impression is that these companies are just raping the land, doing whatever they need to do to get profits out immediately. But that isn't true. They only do that when they don't own the property, not when they do. And that's why we need to get this property out of the hands of the government and into the hands of people who will care for it. And if we put this property up for sale over the next, say, 6 years, auction it off, it might produce a heck of a lot of money to take care of some of the debts of the government. There are assets there. If the government would only get rid of them and make those assets much more useful. All right, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. This is Harry Brown. Don't go away.
You're an adult, right? You're old enough to vote.
You've got a job and a car. Maybe you have a family and own a home. So why do the politicians treat you like a child?
At DownsizeDC.com, we believe you should be free to make your own decisions.
About your health care, your retirement, your children's education. At DownsizeDC.com, we don't trust the politicians. We believe in you.
We believe if you had the chance, you'd slash federal spending, put an end to government waste and corruption, and dramatically reduce your taxes today.
In short, we believe you'd downsize D.C.
Year after year, the federal government expands, meddling in every area of your life.
Make your own decisions. Visit DownsizeDC.com. That's DownsizeDC.com.
this is Harry Brown back with you again, and this is the Saturday Evening Libertarian Conversation. We will be here until the top of the hour after next, and I invite you to call with comments or questions, 1-800-259-9231. In just 10 minutes, we will have our guest, Mary Ruart, and I'm looking forward to it. I've known Mary for about 10 years, and she's a very interesting, thoughtful, original thinker, and I think you're going to find a lot of interest in there in the conversation that we will have. You know, always in the news, ever and forever, is the Iraq War, and I can't help but believe that it will be with us for several years to come, at least. At the very least until 2008, when possibly somebody will be elected, a Republican or Democrat, who sees the folly in continuing this thing and will bring it to some kind of a conclusion, possibly declaring victory and withdrawing American troops. But I can see that George Bush is not going to do that, because George Bush is living in a fantasy world. He has made so many statements that make no sense whatsoever, such as, we told Saddam Hussein to disarm, and he wouldn't disarm, so we went in and made him disarm. Disarm what? Turned out he didn't have anything to disarm. He didn't have any biological, chemical, or nuclear weapons, so what was it that he was supposed to disarm? And yet, George Bush acts as though that's what happened. And, of course, he talks as though Iraq is now a free and peaceful country that it wasn't when Saddam Hussein was in power. Well, as a matter of fact, life was better under Saddam Hussein, although I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form that it was a place where you would want to live or even Iraqis would want to live. But today there's very little electricity. It's, generally speaking, transferred around the country. You get electricity on these days and none the next days and so on and so forth. Gasoline is rationed in the country that was the second largest oil producer in the world. And here gasoline is rationed today. And there are long, long lines at the gas pumps there. And you can just go on and on. Clean water is in scarce supply. And, of course, Bush and other people in the administration try to make a big thing out of the good work that's being done by the military and the American military. They're rebuilding schools and hospitals and so on. Well, why do they have to rebuild these schools and hospitals? Because they were destroyed by the American military, because they were bombed or missiled or just simply strafed, and the whole cities have been devastated, like Fallujah, and those cities have to be rebuilt. And I can't believe that the residents of those cities are grateful to America for rebuilding the cities that America destroyed. So I don't see anything that George Bush has said that makes any sense whatsoever, but yet he likes to believe, or likes to make us think he believes, or he would like us to believe that we have won a victory in Iraq. No, there's more work to be done, that's for sure. Peace comes at a price and so on. But basically, in his view of the world, Iraq has turned into a democracy, a peaceful democracy that will not threaten its neighbors anymore. Just as, now that I think of it, Saddam Hussein wasn't threatening his neighbors. He was disarmed after the Gulf War, and he was a toothless tiger from then on for the 12 years between the two wars. And the United States and British airplanes were bombing Iraq continually and imposing sanctions, and as a result, Hussein was in no position to threaten anybody. He had no arms to speak of, He was not in a position to threaten anybody. And Bush has the gall to imply that he was actually threatening the United States. That's what he said before the war, and that's what he says in retrospect. Now, I mention all this not to rehash the obvious, but to point out that we have a president that is living in a fantasy world. There's no other way to describe it. He is describing things that do not exist. I believe that that is the definition of hallucinations, when people see things that aren't there. So the question really is, does he see these things? Does he believe these things? Or is he merely whistling in the dark and hoping that we will believe them? Well, it's obvious that fewer and fewer people are believing him. The latest polls indicate that only about 30% of the people in America think that it was a good idea to go to war in Iraq. And Bush's approval rating keeps going lower and lower and lower, and it's, of course, well below 50% now. So who knows what would happen if Bush were up for re-election next year instead of not being up for re-election at all in any year. And who knows if somebody had to run on his coattails. Obviously, Dick Cheney is not going to run for president. But if somebody had to run on the Bush record, I can't imagine that he would win, no matter who he was running against, whether it was Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, Al Gore, anybody in the Democratic Party. So what we need to be on guard against is the feeling that we would have been better off with John Kerry or Al Gore, because that is not a given. For all we know, they would have done the same things. For all we know, once the war had started, John Kerry would not have brought it to a close, but would have toughed it out, sent more troops over there. He even said in the debates with George Bush last year that the sanctions were working and that we didn't need to go to war because the sanctions were working. Well, the sanctions caused the death of hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis. So we know right off the bat that John Kerry has no more regard for human life than George Bush does. In fact, more people died in the sanctions than undoubtedly have died in the war so far. So what we have here are politicians who have no regard for human life. That's the only way to put it. And if people will peddle falsehoods to bring us into a war, that's not a mistake. That's not a calculation. That's not a strategy. That's cold-blooded murder. And if Bill Clinton could be impeached on the basis of a stain on a dress, what should George Bush be impeached for? All right, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Mary Ruart, and I hope you'll stay aboard. This is Harry Brown. Don't go away.
This is Harry Brown. My book, Why Government Doesn't Work, provides libertarian solutions to many of today's thorny political problems. How to make America much safer from foreign attack while reducing the military budget dramatically. How to end the Social Security program and free us from that oppressive tax without leaving senior citizens holding the bag. How to reduce crime while reducing government. How to end the income tax immediately and cut the federal budget by over 90%. How a libertarian president could reduce government even without a libertarian Congress. Why Government Doesn't Work is now available for downloading at libertyfree.com for only $9.75. Just $9.75 for Why Government Doesn't Work. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it from your easy chair. You can get Why Government Doesn't Work tonight at libertyfree.com.
This is Harry Brown. We're having a little trouble getting a hold of Mary on the phone, but we will keep trying. And meanwhile, let's take a call from Frank in Brooklyn. Good evening, Frank.
Good evening, Harry. I enjoyed your commentary, and I agree with your discourse. What I wanted to say was basically that the last presidential election, what I found most amusing and sadly amazing was the fact that John Kerry had no differences with regard to economic policy, social policy, or the Iraq war policy than President Bush. So in a sense, in a nation of 312 million people, to have two candidates espousing the same policy just seems to be a contradiction in a democratic republic.
Quite a coincidence, huh?
It is.
Yes, and in fact, Kerry would have had to go a long, long way to appear to be an outspender of Bush, to appear to want more government than George Bush did, because George Bush was bragging about some of the things he did. And like the prescription drug program that he was proposing and so on and so forth.
Yes.
And we've always felt that there wasn't a dime's worth of difference between them, but I don't know that we've ever had an election in which that was so glaringly obvious as it was last year.
It reminds me of Jerzy Kaczynski's novel, Being There, with Chancellor Gardner. But what's interesting is the fact that our current president can't put the metaphors within a specific context. At least Chance or Chauncey Gardner was able to do that. And I'll leave you with that thought. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling, Frank.
Good evening.
All right, the phone number is 1-800-259-9231, and we will keep trying to reach Mary Ruart. We're checking all the Mensa studios in North Carolina where she is. And we will come up with her very, very shortly. So, I guess getting back to the Iraq war and George Bush's stand on it and his policies on it, it has been just the most disastrous situation from the beginning to the end. It wasn't just that there were no weapons of mass destruction. There were no mobile laboratories. There were no aluminum tubes that could be used for nuclear reactors. There was no attempt to get enriched uranium from Africa, as Bush claimed that Hussein was trying to do. There were no Al-Qaeda trading camps around Baghdad, as was claimed. All of the claims that were made against Hussein turned out to be false. And we have to take, then, any other claims that have not been proven or refuted yet with a grain of salt. We have to wonder if all these terrible things that Hussein is alleged to have done to his own people actually took place until we get some kind of independent verification of it. And by independent, I mean coming from someplace other than the U.S. government. As I said before, we have to realize that 90% of what we know about foreign affairs emanates from our government, that's where the information comes from. And we get now with the Internet, we get some information independently. We can read foreign newspapers. We can get information about the Middle East from Al Jazeera. We can get information about Europe from various sources like the Financial Times and so on. And all this information comes to us instantly now rather than having to go through the mails and take weeks before we really know what's going on. So we're much better off than we were before, but we still have to rely on our government for a great deal of information. And when I say for a great deal of information, I should say for a great what we're relying on is, how should I put it, statements that are made by our government. Maybe allegations is too strong a word, but all of these things are done with a partisan tinge to them. And all of these things that come out of our government are colored by the party that's in office and what that party wants us to believe. If our party wants us to believe that Iran is cheating on its agreements with regard to nuclear development, then that's what we're going to hear, that Iran has done this and that it is known to have done this and that, and Hussein violated X number of UN resolutions and so on. And not only do we have to wonder whether the numbers are accurate, whether the statements are accurate, but we also have to wonder whether they've been taken out of context. It would help when it's mentioned that Iraq, for instance, has violated 17 UN resolutions, to know that the United States has violated double that number of UN resolutions. In fact, the country that has violated more UN resolutions than anybody else is the United States, and in second place is Israel. And Iraq is somewhere down the line, somewhere down the list, 7th, 10th, I don't know where. But the point is that these things are out of context. We get no perspective on them. And the only antidote for this that I can see is to read the foreign press on the Internet. And there you get the perspective of people like Robert Fisk and Eric Margolis and some others who write for the UK Independent and The Guardian and some of these other publications, and are historians in essence, in that they know a great deal about history, and they put a context on everything that's going on today. Eric Margolis, for instance, has written extensively about how the British came into Iraq and said, "We come not as occupiers or conquerors, we come as liberators." Well, for 20 years, the liberators had to fight off the insurgents, just like our military is doing today. All right, well, I'm happy to say that we have Mary Ruart on the line, and so as soon as we take this brief break, we're going to come back and start our interview with Mary Ruart, and I hope you will stay aboard because I think you're going to enjoy it. And in the meantime, you might want to jot down the phone number. It's 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. And we will be back right after these words from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Harry Brown, and it is my pleasure now to introduce Mary Ruart, who is a research scientist in the pharmaceutical industry and the author of a path-breaking libertarian book called Healing Our World, which came out at least more than a decade ago and now is coming out in a new edition. And Mary, we're so glad to have you with us tonight.
Well, I'm glad to be with you, Harry.
And give us a brief breakdown of the theme of Healing Our World.
Well, Healing Our World talks about liberty in a very different way than most libertarian books that talk about rights and things of that nature. In fact, I don't use the word right in the book at all. What I do is just take the everyday relations that we have with each other as neighbors and show how if we applied those same principles, which of course are the libertarian principles, that we would have unprecedented prosperity and harmony. And I go through step by step how it works in the real world and make the pragmatic case for liberty. In fact, there's over 1,000 references in Healing Our World. Although to keep it light, I use cartoons and other devices because it's easy to get bogged down in research.
Yeah, 1,000 references. You mean examples of things?
That's right. Hundreds of real-life examples of how liberty works in the real world. Because I think one of the reasons we lost our liberties was that early in the 20th century, people said, well, you know, the people who wanted to get rid of liberty said, hey, you know, liberty is a fine concept, but it doesn't work in the real world. It doesn't help the poor. It doesn't save the environment. It doesn't stop criminals. And so what I've tried to show in Healing Our World is that it's liberty that is the friend of the poor. It's liberty that saves the environment. It's liberty that gives us all those things that politicians promise but never deliver.
Mm-hmm. Whatever the saying, as the saying goes, whatever the problem, liberty is the answer.
That's right.
Well, that's good. And now this new edition that's coming out, have you made changes in the book?
Yes, the 2003 edition, which is the one that I'm now really getting very active in promoting, is expanded. I think there's probably another 25% added to it in terms of actual word content, and the number of references doubled. It won the freemarket.net Book of the Year Award in 2003, and it really tries to come from the heart. And a lot of people give this book to their liberal friends in order to bring them to liberty. And I've had a lot of repeat buyers because it's been very successful in that way.
Yes, it does approach it from a standpoint that should be more conducive to liberal thinking and left-wing thinking, because you're talking about the issues that are important to them and not dismissing them, but rather hitting them head-on. Tell us a little bit about your background in the pharmaceutical industry. You sent me a document this past week. I don't have it in front of me, so I can't tell you the title of it, but go ahead.
It's Deadly Secrets Behind Soaring Pharmaceutical Prices.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it fascinating. I mean, it's no big surprise that it's government regulation that causes prices to soar in the pharmaceutical industry, but yet I didn't realize exactly how that works, how just the many different ways that regulation affects prices. It isn't just lengthening the time it takes for approval and some of the obvious things that we hear a lot about, and I found the whole thing fascinating. Is there some way that people can get that document?
Yes, well, actually, I'm doing a special promotion this Wednesday, October 12th, and even though Deadly Secrets normally retails for $30, your listeners can get it free if they buy a copy of Healing Our World at Amazon.com on October 12th. And what they need to do is to go to my website and get the instructions on exactly how to get it. It's part of a bonus bundle that's worth over $150. So your listeners will be able to buy Healing Our World for $24.95, and they'll be able to get, in addition, $150 worth of free bonuses, including Deadly Secrets.
For what did you say, $29.95?
$24.95.
And is Amazon cooperating on this? Are they delivering these bonuses?
No, the bonuses are delivered through my website. So what people should do if they want to take advantage of this offer is go directly to my website, which is ruart.com, www.ruart, I'll spell that, ruwart.com. And right there on the home page, you can see a link to the Amazon promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And that will help them go through the process.
You're hoping, of course, that this will push this up the charts at Amazon, of course.
That's right. Amazon keeps a record of their sales every day and lists a bestseller list, a top 100. I'm hoping that if I can get Healing Our World high in the chart, that I'll be able to get a major publisher to pick up Healing and get it into the bookstores.
That'd be good.
Mm-hmm, because it's been successful in the movement. But we really need wider distribution.
Sure. All right. Well, don't go away, Mary. We will be back in just a couple of minutes after these commercials. And you out there in Radio Land, give us a call, 1-800-259-9231, with any questions or comments. And we will be back in just a couple of minutes.
If you produce computer storage media, you need GlideRite test heads. GlideRite is a major supplier of test heads to most media manufacturers in the U.S. and Asia. In addition, GlideRite produces glide heads, burnish heads, certifier heads, and thermal asperity heads, focusing on meeting your specific needs with short turnaround times and optimum quality, all at a competitive price. GlideRite's delivery performance is unmatched, whether quantities are large or small. GlideRite has manufacturing facilities in Milpitas, California, and Ho Chi Minh, Vietnam. Each site is equipped with state-of-the-art tooling and computerized equipment. GlideRite's services include research and development, new design and technology, and engineering support. Whether you need standard heads or customized solutions, GlideRite is your expert source. So when designing hard disks, always specify GlideRite.
Harry Brown here. We're talking with Mary Ruart, author of Healing Our World. And this special promotion takes place for just one day on October 12th?
That's right, Harry. That's the way we can get Healing Our World up in the chart.
And the 12th is Tuesday?
Wednesday. Wednesday.
Okay, Wednesday.
Wednesday, yes, yes. So between 12:01 on Wednesday morning and 11:59 p.m. in the evening, your listeners can get over $150 worth of bonuses when they buy Healing Our World from Amazon.
And if you go to ruart.com, you can get a full description of the book and a summary of many of the points that are made. And most likely you're going to see a subject there that you might have stumbled over in talking with somebody else. And so it behooves you to find out what's in that book, whether it's something about the environment or the poor or whatever it may be, something where you just haven't been able to get through to people. And so I highly recommend it. It certainly is a different approach, and it's a very good book. And I hope that the promotion goes very well on the 12th. Now, we just have a couple of minutes left before we go to the news break. But maybe you can just give us a taste of what's in Deadly Secrets, and then we'll talk about it more after the news.
Sure. Well, I talk about my career as a research scientist at the Upjohn Company and how regulation actually made it difficult for us to put out new innovative drugs. I also talk about how the legislation passed in 1962 added 10 years and created a situation where millions of people have died waiting for life-saving drugs.
10 years to the regulation process to get a drug approved.
Right. It used to be 4.5 years before these regulations were passed, and now they're 14.5 and climbing. And the danger, of course, there is that some people, like the AIDS patients, couldn't wait. So they went to underground chemists to make the drugs that companies like the Upjohn Company were working on. By the time we tried to do clinical studies, every AIDS patient in the country had already had our compound through the underground network.
My gosh, I hadn't heard that before. An awful lot of people died. And you tell the story of, isn't propanolol in there?
I'm sorry?
Isn't propanolol in there?
Propanolol, yes, the heart disease. Yes, the first beta blocker for heart disease. We got it 3 years later. Europe got it first. In fact, we used to go over to Europe to develop and market our compounds first because their regulations made it much easier, really, to get on the market.
And there was a study done by Arthur D. Little Company.
That's right. 10,000 people died every year in the U.S. because that drug wasn't available, at least.
Gosh. And the FDA is supposed to save lives. We'll be back right after the news. You get to hear about the president's radio broadcast and other fiction. And we will be talking further with Mary Ruart when we come back. So please don't go away. We've got another hour to go.